Welcome to Ballsy, the podcast where I interview successful artists and creators on how they got the balls to sell their art and turn their practice into a profitable business. As a former entrepreneur turned artist, I realized that being an artist is basically like running a small startup, and you, the artist, are the CEO. I talk to artists about their businesses, talk real numbers, growth hacks, tools and tricks, and how they were ballsy enough to make that their career. Hey everybody, welcome to a wonderful episode of Ballsy. Today we are super fortunate enough to have an old G, been an artist for a while, Apexer, based out of San Francisco, has come to join us.
Thanks for having me. My name is Apexer. I'm from San Francisco. I've been a writer, artist ever since third grade, consciously. And growing up in the late 70s, early 60s, in San Francisco, there was writing everywhere. For people who don't know, from within the culture, we called each other writers. Outside of the culture, the media called it graffiti. And I still stick to how I would approach another active artist and say writers. At a young age, it was just so much writing everywhere in the city. It captured me. It was the first public art that I saw. It was the first art that I saw outside of the home, and it stuck with me. That first impression stuck with me my whole life. As I went through the different stages of schooling, it was always in the back of my brain of like, how can I work this that I'm learning into the writing culture all the way to the present? And I've traveled all over the world. I've had different experiences of painting, and pretty much people know me for my abstract geometrical shapes. And that's because late 90s, I had a big mural job and we were doing the photorealism, and some other people weren't happy with the subject matter. So ever since then, I said, oh, I'm just going completely abstract and nobody can really hate on that. And yeah, well, that's where we're at now. Of course, there's details in between.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I go all the way back to the beginning.
Okay.
So you're a graffiti guy. So I assume, did you have a job before you started graffiti, or you were just making graffiti at night and bombing streets? What did you do before you were an artist, so to speak, or if there even is a spot where you weren't?
There is no before an artist. Okay. I was a kid, third grade. I was in it. And as I aged up, I just kept going with it. I just kept being a writer and finding new tools and techniques. But being so young, it was very similar to the beginning stages of it in New York, where the young guys, you have to figure it out. What's that cap? What's that marker? What's that ink? I had to explore, and I've kept that close to me to this day.
So what did you do to fund that? What did you do to buy all your spray paint, to buy the supplies and to do stuff?
As a young kid?
Yeah.
You know what young kids do and the society doesn't like. We ran around and you got it the best way that you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
By hook or by crook.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, when did you find out, or when did you start selling art or realize that this was a way that you could actually make a living?
Those are two different stages, a way to make a living and selling it. In high school, I had a couple of moments where I was able to sell some artwork, because of the art teacher at the school knew how to maneuver things and was trying to educate us. But it was still a disconnect for me. And then it was years later, my first corporate job, where I painted a mural for Young & Rubicon ad agency. And that's when I went, okay, I see what's up. Let me really try to figure this out. And I never looked back. I just kept... Of course, ups and downs, but I always kept focused on how can I turn this into a career.
You were basically doing it. You were a street artist. You were doing it for fun. You were doing it just to put work up because that's what you did. And then one job for an ad agency and you get sucked in.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always, to this day, it's always been about the experiment. Like, I'm always trying out a new idea and trying to let that idea build off of an old one. And that's what I was doing on the streets. And then when I got recognized and that work qualified for this particular job, then, yeah, I was like, this could be a career.
Okay. So you now have a job. Someone paid you a bunch of money to go do an artwork. How did you go about to make that a career? Or did it just come to you organically? Did that one lead to something else?
I led it to something else. It was like a light bulb went off, and I was like, okay, I have to figure this out. I have to make sure that I'm in the right circles and let me educate myself, because there's no book on how to do it. There was nothing at that time. And so I had to go out there and figure it out myself.
And so
cut my own road.
So how'd you go about doing it?
Just that, like going to the gallery shows, going to the museum shows, like going to the openings, meeting people, researching online, like what's going on and trends, and then making sure that I was making available a body of work that I thought at the time was really in that right direction. And people, luckily the right people started noticing, curators and whatnot, that then they knew either their clients or their friends would then go, oh, we need somebody to come paint this wall. And then they're like, oh yeah, Apex.
Now, was there a particular point where this kind of went parabolic on you, or was it like a more of a gradual trend?
Yeah, that was when I just went nutso painting a bunch of murals on the street. I just was like, okay, that's cool, but let me just push. And every couple of years I have that where I'll just push and just knock out a bunch of murals all over the city. And when I did that, then a lot of people, and at the time that I was doing that, it was very conscious. Other people were just being lazy. They just wanted to go to bars, clubs, hang out, which was cool. But for me, I was like, if you guys are all doing that, I've always been a guy. If you're going right, I'm going to go left. So I went left, painted all these murals. And when I did that, a lot of people noticed, good and bad. And that, in regards to our conversation, that helped my career boom.
Got it. And then so more people came to you in terms of paying you to do murals.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what sort of works do you make now and do you sell? Do you do mostly paintings? Do you do prints? Do you ever do sculptural stuff? Or is it really only mural stuff?
So for years, from 06 to like 14, somewhere in there, I was doing gallery shows all the time and selling canvas work, low relief sculptures, all making them myself. And then, and sprinkled throughout that, I would do private commissions. And then from there, I just went straight commercial, doing private commission mural work for individuals and corporations or festivals. And didn't really concentrate on sculptural stuff, more in my private, but not for anyone. A couple sculptures here and there for the avant-garde collector that knows, oh wait, I want that. I haven't seen that before. And currently still doing the commercial work. And I just recently am getting back into the gallery scene to do that work. My next show that I have will definitely be a canvas based as well as some form of sculptural.
And so when you start, like you said, you started out, so I would guess from submerging yourself in the art scene, and this is all in San Francisco, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So submerging yourself.
San Francisco, New York.
Okay. So submerging yourself in the art scene in those worlds and like where you met all those people, is that where you were able to get those gallery intros and find yourself in that circle?
Oh, yeah. Okay. 100%. Like hitting the pavement, being there for whatever years those were. Definitely got the introduction, and then you just get sucked in.
Now, so at the early part of your career, and maybe now, I'm not sure, where did most of your sales come from? Most of your work was gallery-driven and commercial-driven, or did you sell personally via web, or did you have other channels other than gallery that you worked with?
It was all gallery and private commissions.
Oh, that's good.
And even to this day, and every once in a while, I'll play around, but you have to experiment in the studio. I'll play around on some stuff just for fun and sell it through social media at like a reasonable price point, just because it's fun.
And speaking of reasonable price points, do you ever do things like prints or like limited editions or things like that to let the newer or younger collector in?
Yeah, I was doing a lot of prints at one point through 1X Run out of
Detroit.
Great people up there, and then a couple prints here and there. But truthfully, I have a whole new process that I'm going to start coming up where I truthfully don't like prints myself. Okay. I understand it. I get it. I actually own some prints exactly as that person's artwork is worth. Crazy, but I can afford this. So I get it for that level, but I don't feel like my work is that out of reach right now.
Okay.
When it comes to canvas work, then going to do like another 18. I have a series of works on paper, archival, like heavy arches paper, and where I just paint directly on it. And they're one-on-ones. And for me, it's fun to do. It's not that time consuming. And I can provide at a reasonable rate artwork for people that is a one-on-one versus a print.
Yeah, if you can do one-on-one, if you have the market for it, do it all day. That actually begs the question. So one of the things I always struggle with and I always find, I'm always curious about, is how much time artists spend actually making art versus how much time artists spend doing everything else it takes to make said art. Like, how much is the hustle? How much is the sales? How much is the shipping? How much, yada.
Yeah, I think that's a really funny and interesting question, because I think that doing it for so long that you get, and somebody like me that loves to experiment and likes to push myself, that first Y&R job that I'm talking about, I asked the videographer that was with me, hey, time me on this 8-foot by 8-foot section here. And he timed me. And I don't remember exactly, but let's say that took me 2 hours at that time to do that section. Later, I remember a year and a half later, he was still filming me at another job, and he goes, dude, remember that Y&R job that took you 2 hours? I was like, yeah, how long did this take me? He was like, 30 minutes. So that's like a classic example of, over the years, you could compress what used to take you a long amount of time just because of experience. Let's just stick to the 80-20 rule. The 20% of it is painting, 80% of it is all business.
Oh, okay. I wish I could get to 80% painting.
No, it's 20% painting, 80% business.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. I was going to say, that's way more normal.
No, I wish I had 80% also. No, it's 80% business. It's we're our own individual departments within our company.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I always look at my art business, is just that. It's a business, right? There's marketing, there's fulfillment, there's production, there's like all of the different, unfortunately, you unfortunately wear all those hats.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, let's go through the hats. In terms of marketing stuff like that, is it social? Is it PR? Is it press? Like, where do you focus your time and attention? Is it just hustling and working the streets?
Through the years, it's been different things. And there was a sweet spot there where I was 80% art, 20% business. And I was rolling. And in that time period, everything you just mentioned from marketing, PR, everything was just rolling together. It just seemed like one seamless thing, where I was getting the publications, the online, the interviews. It was great. And it was all happening. Like, yeah, come to the studio. I'm creating. Okay, they leave and I keep on creating. It was like this great 5 years that I had of that, which actually goes back to your earlier question of the boom, because that's when it happened. Like right after that boom started, it was that 80% was just all like growth. And now, yeah, I do through social media is like a lot of my marketing. I've looked over the years for different PR people, but that always seems a little bit off. I haven't found any real chemistry yet with a PR firm or individual.
That's tough.
It's tough. And so I do a lot of that myself, reaching out to people, or if it's through a gallery or the last whatever years, the companies that I work with, they have their own internal teams that really help to push things out.
Now, are you a prolific artist? Do you make a lot of works every year, or is it somewhat limited? How long does it take you to, when you do your works on paper or things like that, do you block it out? How does that process look?
Yeah, 100%. I block out my work on paper or canvas, but my approach to everything is like hard work. Give me a week and let me just go in as many hours as possible. Like, eat what is needed, sleep a little bit, and just produce. Because I'd like to get in a flow state.
Okay.
And just hit it. So paint 12 hours straight, paint 14 hours straight. I like to get in those states when, and I'm very dialed in on what is needed to keep me going. So like when I'm painting a large mural, that's my mindset. I don't really care about anything else. If I'm in the studio and producing a body of work for a show, similar mindset. For works on paper, I'll have the idea maybe floating around for a week and it's just in the side of my brain. And then the first day that, because it's my own schedule, the first day that a window opens up, okay, everything's already primed, ready to go, boom. And then just flow through that. And that usually takes maybe 2 days of work. Do your first pass day one and then come back the next day, see if you like everything, and then do a second pass. But all my work is all flow state.
So you go basically, when you're in the studio, you're in the studio, and you just grind 100%, and then do all the other aspects on the days when, on the non-studio days, so to speak.
Yeah, non-studio days, or get up in the morning. There's times where you want it to be a studio day, and it's not going to happen. So you get up in the morning, and you're answering all the emails, all the phone calls, and you're doing everything. And then you get into the studio at 1 p.m. or something after, and then now you're like, okay, what am I going to do? But for me, it's like, long as I could chip away at it, and then I go, okay, like today's Tuesday. Okay, you know what? I didn't get into the studio. This is going to be office day. Let me just blaze everything out so that I can get 2 more days where I'm just painting. And those people, they could wait a little bit.
Now, question for you. Do you have a team at all? Are there people you work with, assistants, accountants, agents, managers, gallery? What does your team look like in terms of production? And is that different for big mural project versus art projects?
A layered question here.
Sorry, it was too much. I sometimes jam too much in there.
No, it's all good. I get it, though. I understand. So forever, it was just me.
Okay.
And then my videographer.
Okay.
Who was doing most of my videos. And then for the last year or so, had an assistant. And then they wanted to move on from doing that work. And within the last year, signed to WME. So I have an agent now with that. And that's starting to kick into play, having an agent. And forever, I looked for a manager, and that never worked out, which I'm glad. Because a lot of times, people don't want to talk to a manager. They want to talk directly to the artist, which is funny, interesting, and understandable at the same time.
Sure.
And then when I work with the big corporations, they usually have their whole teams. And I just jump in knowing the lay of the land of that side of it. I just jump in with them and really help navigate all the different aspects that are needed from the production, working with the GC, working with the marketing, working with, if it's not my videographer, their videographer. I usually just jump in and work with their team to get it done.
Now, I'm going to jump around a bit. The videographer is interesting. So it sounds like everything you've done, you've always recorded and videoed and done whatever. That I think a lot of people, especially in this day and age, miss the importance of the documentation of all this work. Why do you have it and where do you use it? And tell me about your thought process around it.
I wish I used it more, to tell the truth, and had a second shooter so that I can get different content. Like, I can think of all this stuff, but I can't do it. We can't do it. It's just one of us. This kind of goes back a while ago to, I was in a like triennial show out here in San Francisco, and the curator was a very like blunt kind of guy, and he was just talking to all the artists beforehand, and he said, this to me is like a jewel. He said to everybody, was like, somebody said, oh, are we going to do a catalog? And he just flat out said, if there's no catalog, there was no show. And I went, wow, like, okay. And that was before what we have now with our cell phones and social media, blah, blah, blah. So when technology started catching up, I was like, wait a minute. If there's no documentation of it to fit the platforms that everyone is on, then did it exist? And the truth of it is, there's things that I've painted and I didn't document it and I didn't put it on social media and nobody knows about it. And then there's often where I'll go back, maybe I did document it, but I didn't post it. And then I'll go back and I'll post it years later and people are like, wow, that's new. And I'm like, nah, that's actually really old. So the idea of always having somebody to film or document one way or another and to share it really came from that seed, from that curator that said, if you don't have a catalog, did the show exist? And ever since then, I've been stuck on that.
If a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound, right? Like,
exactly.
Especially now in this day and age where I can tell you just from my career in the past year and like everything that's happened, it was all video and Instagram and TikTok. It's all like the raw speed and power of which everything can take off from that. And once again, just more eyes that get to see your work. The more prescient words might not have been said. Like if you didn't take a picture, did it happen?
Yeah, exactly.
And when you did, so as a one-man show, like when you negotiated all these deals and you were doing your big mural work, did you do all the negotiations yourself and all the contract work? And did you do all that?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I had to learn. I had to learn on the fly. Mess up some great things and then go, oh, yeah, I remember that from last time. That wasn't so good. Keep all my contracts and then let me like cross-reference and just have to learn.
And so what are some of the biggest public work stuff you've done? Because you've done some pretty impressive things along your career.
Won't get into the learning lesson from it, but worked with a buddy of mine, DJ Neff, out of LA, and we painted for Nissan this huge campaign for one of their new cars, and we painted it to scale in LA, a huge mural. And from there, the ad agency shot it. And that thing went on two massive top to bottom building wraparounds off the 10 and the 405 in LA and in Washington, DC, wrapped around the whole stadium. It was in Times Square. It was down the whole block. That was a huge campaign. And for me, that was really important, that particular one, because I did a straight up burner. And people who don't know what that is, that's a really complicated, layered, showing off your skills with letters in the writing culture. And they wanted it, which was great. And for me to be able to have that in Times Square, for all the old school New York guys that came out and saw that and everyone's like, what? Like, because a lot of times from the culture, you don't think of yourself in that limelight. So for me, it was really important for them to say, this is where it's come, that this can be accepted in that manner. So yeah, for Nissan, that was a big one. I've done a lot of things with Complex Magazine. Now I'm thinking about it. My brain's Tao, Hospitality Group. Worked with them a couple times.
Now, do you prefer this corporate work and the big mural stuff, or do you prefer the more studio-driven stuff?
It's left and right brain, truthfully. The big corporate work is great to work with, usually 9 out of 10 times, to work with teams that completely understand flow and workflow and how to get things done. And one, I get to learn from that. Two, my curious mind gets to see all this BTS from these mega corporations and sites being built out, which is great because I'm super curious about that stuff that normal person doesn't get to see. So I really enjoy, for a lot of different reasons, the corporate. And then, and of course, to be honest, the check that comes with it.
Yeah.
Which is really just a reward for all the years before, to tell the truth.
Yeah,
and then the studio work is the studio work or the free public pieces that I do. Those are fully like given back to the community or the culture, as well as just being able to try something new and to get a response back from it. It's two different. It really is like left and right brain, but I enjoy both of them.
When you say free public works, you do a lot of, Terry, it's not pro bono, but like for big scale, give me a little bit of like how that stuff works and how you go about doing those. And do they pay for the paint? And like, how do you go about, one, getting like big public works, and two, executing them?
So with all the public art, like I said, I'm a super curious person. I'm always scanning any environment that I'm in. When we first hopped on the call, I was looking at all of your pieces behind you.
You can see me in
that. In San Francisco, for instance, if there's a wall that I drive by for years and there's nothing on it, it just irks me. So I'll stop by and ask for the owner or try to figure out a way. Slow drip. And there's one particular wall that's a high profile spot in San Francisco that actually will answer a lot of your questions. That I was at a friend's party and we were all just chatting, and then they mentioned where they lived. I hopped on them and they were like, oh, we live in this building. I was like, I've been trying to get a mural on that building forever. And I've done this in a lot of places.
Okay.
And outside of San Francisco as well. And then they went and got me in contact with their building owner. I spoke with him and he actually didn't believe that I've paid attention to that location. And I gave him a history of every color, anything that was ever mark that was put on the wall. And he goes, sold, you can have it. And I've redone that wall 3 times. The first time I did it, I was just so excited. I wanted to do it. I snuck it in between jobs and painted it. Once again, it was an experiment, what I wanted to do. And then the second time, he was like, I have to pay you. I have to pay you something. Because he was like, the community loves it. And oh my God, I didn't know. So I was like, you know what? Whatever you want to cut me, I'm fine with it. He gave me a check that he was comfortable with, and I thanked him for it. But with a lot of the pro bono is a great way to state it, because with a lot of that work, I'm being fulfilled, and I'm also giving back to a community. So I always have a sliding scale.
Yeah.
And I only do it when I know that, everything else around me is covered. I'm not stressing over my next check or something like that. And my calendar opens up. So that work is always a great stuff to do. Now, and to just use the network of friends to figure out like how you can get another location.
Do you limit yourself? Like, I know when I do my big installations, if I get one a month and I'm capped out, like between the travel and this and then that, do you do them more? Do you do them less?
I try to time it out, and that rarely works. Like right now, I'm about to go into, I've had like kind of a leisurely month. Been doing some work, but leisurely. And then I'm starting this Friday, I'm doing a music festival. Then right after music festival, doing a client's home. And then right after that, I have 3 other jobs lined up. And the third one, I think, is the biggest one. So it's like, it's this huge ramp up that all just clusters together. And I've always go, I see it when it starts to happen. Like, oh, can we move this here? And I'm like, yeah. And then the next day, here comes a phone call. Hey, are you available? Sure.
I know the feeling. I had one of those literally that I just packed up for. It was like, they're like, we're desperate. We need last minute. I'm like, oh, all right, I'll fit it in. A little greed is good every now and again.
Well, it's greed as well as it's your work, and it's people are asking for it. And it's really hard to say no to that.
Yeah. That's
Oh, you value me? You value my work? Okay, yeah, I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you can make a little bit of scratch, why not?
Yeah, 100%.
What's the biggest one you ever did? Just curious.
Biggest commission?
Like the biggest, physically the largest thing.
Oh.
I'm always fascinated.
Well, I have a couple of real big ones, but the one coming up in Sacramento in a couple of months is going to be the biggest, and it's actually going to be me and 2 other artists, and it's going to be the biggest one on the West Coast, and it's 120 feet tall.
What?
And yeah, and forget how wide it is. It's 120 tall by almost like 100 wide, my section, and then there's 2 more sections just like it.
Okay, so I have a question. So this has nothing to do with business. This has nothing to do with anything. This is more of my curiosity. How do you scale it up? I've seen a bunch of stuff where people put squigglies on the wall and different things. How do you get it from, obviously you sketch that out on a piece of paper before you put it on a giant wall. What's right. The physical process of making something like yay big 100 feet tall? And how do you make your brain work like that?
I grew up surfing. So for me, it's all about lineups in the ocean. You have to figure that out because your current is always moving you. So I took that in mind when I started scaling up murals. And then my work is all geometrical. So it's math. It's squares, triangles, elongated rectangles. So how I mainly do it is once I get the first one scaled up, and I'll step back and I'll visualize it, I'll look. Like, okay, yes, that's perfect scale. Then I'll just run it. After the first one is two scale. And then you just know.
So is there a connection between the scale on the paper and the scale on the wall? You're like, oh, this is 2 inches, and therefore this will be 2 feet?
Visually, if you, let's say it's a rectangle, let's say it's a wall that's 20 by 80, and the sketch is 2 by 8 inches.
Right.
So then now I know how to...
So you literally just look at this and look at that and be like, oh, I got this?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I forget that.
For most of them, there's other times where if I'm working with somebody else, I have to really dial it in a little bit more. All the tools, if it's projector or people like the squiggly lines.
I
personally hate the projector. If it's my art, I don't use it that much. If it's like I did a signage that had my artwork behind it, but it was a campaign. And for that, I projected it up because it was a font that I was using. And I can sit up there forever and try to figure it out. But nah, time is more, be more efficient. Time is money. Project that up, line it, done.
Yeah, I'm always just fascinated from a technical standpoint because I see all these like amazingly big works. And I'm like, how does that happen? Right?
Yeah, some artists, that like especially like portraiture, they'll look at like weird little nooks and crannies on the wall and figure that out. The squiggly lines started from portraiture. And that was the easiest way that you put the squiggly lines up, you take a photo, then you Photoshop that opacity back, you Photoshop that over your image, and now you know exactly where to paint it and print. Yeah, like that.
It makes sense to me. I just never did it. It makes sense. It looks hard.
Yeah. Either way around it, as soon as your brain understands it, then you're good to go.
Now, 120 feet, you have to go up on what? Like on cherry pickers and like...
No, this is going to be, we're using the biggest articulated lift that they have in the region. It's way up there.
Do you ever get scared up there?
This one might be the first one to do that for me.
Okay.
I've been on a 60 footer and I was painting up there, just loving it. Everybody's below me. I couldn't hear anything. Just cruising along. And then the wind picked up and I was like, oh, let me just, okay, not too bad. Let me just go with the wind to paint. This is cool. And then the arm started like crinking, like making a noise.
Down.
And then at that point I was like, I think I should come down.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to push it. So I came down that day. But yeah, no, I'm not really, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. And what's a better way to do it than doing my art?
That's true.
You know? That I want that to happen, knock on wood. If it has to, all right.
Correct. So a couple things I always ask artists as we start coming towards the end of these things is looking back, somewhat pay it forward and somewhat curious, and both sides of the same coin. So as an artist, like, what was your biggest mistake and what was your greatest success?
Second one I know instantly. Biggest mistake, though.
You can start with the success.
No, let's end on that note. The biggest mistake, trusting the wrong people.
Okay.
Trusting somebody else's manager. Trusting other people have your best interest in mind when... You wake up, you realize that they have their best interests in mind.
Yeah.
They have their bank account in mind. And you have to just chop it up as good business, especially if you don't know the people. Like, they're trying to get the best deal that they can for whatever reason. And that was a hard one to learn. And even people who are really good at their job, they know how to be really friendly, they're still trying to get the best deal that they can for their company or themselves, their client, whatever. That was the hardest one to learn. And then once you learn that, then You just go into those meetings and those situations like, okay, business hat on. And afterwards, we can shake hands and laugh at like, oh, I got you on that deal, or you got me on that deal, whatever. Like, it's just business. And then you can be friends afterwards or hang out or cool with one another. I would say that, yeah, that's the hardest one to learn. And then the biggest success was betting on myself and tripling down on it. Anytime that, and I've seen a lot of people bet on themselves and then fade away and not triple down. And the tripling down doesn't mean like blindly leading forward into something. It means, okay, yeah, I'm going out there and going to the gallery shows, going to the museum shows, going to lectures, talks, whatever, going to these engagements, as well as, okay, when I get home, I'm researching, or okay, let me pick up a book and do more research, and let me have the third amount of time to think about where I want to go, so that now I can start researching where I want to go and not just be happy with where I'm at today. That's tripling down a little bit of what tripling down means on yourself. Because if it's good business for someone to undercut you or to steal your IP or all those kind of things, then it's good business for you to trust in yourself and invest in yourself. So I would say that's been my biggest win, that I'm here today because I tripled down on self.
Yeah, it's often the scariest.
Right. Yeah. What you just said, it's something that I used to tell people, that I'll set myself up to trip because I know I would never land on my face. And if you think about that, most of the time when you trip, you stumble forward. And then you're going to learn, and then you look back like, what just tripped me? And then you learn and you don't do it again. But guess what? You just went forward. I set myself up at times so that I trip, knowing that I'm never going to land on my face. Hey, just give me credit. Live life to the fullest, which is another version of the triple down on self, and speak up for yourself. Engage. What you were saying, leaning into it, if you feel like a little scared about being somewhere, and I'm not talking about some like hood situation, but unless that's the direction that you're going, that lean into something if you're feeling a little scared, because that's usually means growth and you're going to learn from it. But and always make sure that you have your foundation or your home base that you could come back to. Make sure that is important at the beginning, to make sure that you have a foundation. And once you have that foundation, then lean into opportunities that you might be a little scared of, and then learn from it. No such thing as a younger man's game. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you for having me today. And I look forward to you and me figuring out a cool collaboration in the future. All right, everyone. Thank you. Apexer, APEXER, Apexer Labs, and on YouTube and TikTok, Apex One. Thank you.